In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. A big thank you to the listeners of this station and In Other News. I really appreciate the support of the topics on this show and for Gary Bobroff's book. So thank you once again very much. On this show, we will continue to report on the different facets of weather control engineering or geoengineering or the aerosol operations or climate engineering. The sudden awareness to the reality of these operations being conducted in plain sight can be a jarring experience. Many who have had this experience can't believe how long it took them to finally see it. How can a veil be so strong to hide this reality from good, intelligent, caring humans on this planet? Well, we explore some of the reasons that could contribute to a delayed awareness. In the opinion of some of the top researchers into climate engineering, geoengineering programs have been deployed in real time for the last 15 years. It's critical to remind listeners that programs such as solar radiation management are being conducted in real time right now. You may have noticed the aircraft releasing aerosol in the skies over New York City the past few days. That's a geoengineering program. These operations are done in secret and in plain sight. We look at the many aspects of conditioning, such as lying by omission, sock puppet TV meteorologists who call the trails high cirrus clouds, normalizing the visual effects of the operations to children by embedding unnatural skies into animation films. The list goes on and on. Our guest is Wanda Allen. She's from New Hampshire and has given a powerful presentation on geoengineering, its side effects, and she continues to fill in some of the missing pieces that some listeners may not have heard about before, such as Monsanto buying WeatherCorp. Wanda joins us to discuss her story from becoming aware of the unnatural skies to producing a focused presentation on her research. Wanda, welcome to Another News.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Wanda, I watched your presentation that you gave earlier this year titled Look Up, and it was about geoengineering. You gave this in Bartlett, New Hampshire. Very interesting. You pulled a lot of peripheral information together under the geoengineering or climate engineering umbrella. And it makes sense because we've said on the show before, when you mess with the sky, you mess with everything, the web of life. Your experience in becoming aware of the ongoing weather control operations was something I think that happens to a number of people, but could you tell listeners what had happened to you?
Sure. I think it started, you know, there was a little bit of preview to it before I actually started noticing the skies, but I started spending winters out in Arizona, and I was learning about GMO foods and going organic and also learning more and more about what goes on behind the scenes that I was not aware of. And I started signing petitions, and then when you start signing petitions, then more petitions come to you, and I became really aware of how things that were going on as far as our food and other things that I was really against, and thinking all along that our government was taking care of us and doing what we felt, you know, that looking in our best interest, and then realizing that really wasn't so. But going organic, I felt like I was going in a good direction, and I was taking care of things that mattered to me. And when I came back to New Hampshire, I, you know, really downsized and reduced my carbon footprint as much as possible and was feeling incredibly good about it. And one afternoon, I just happened, it was in November, and I happened to go outside to play with my dog, and I looked up in the sky, and it was just filled with a milky white haze and all these trails that went from horizon to horizon, and I had this sinking feeling in my stomach that something was horribly wrong, that I had never seen something like that before, and I was wondering what on earth is going on. So, but I knew that it was never right and that I had never seen something like that before, mm-hmm. and it was such a contrast to the beautiful blue sky that it really stood out to me. So I asked some friends about it, and they told me to watch a movie, What in the World Are They Spraying? So I did, and it answered everything, pretty much. It was exactly what I was seeing in the sky, and from that point on, I knew that it was sort of the breaking point for me in that I had to stand up and do something about it, that I just couldn't fathom the idea that somebody would actually take control of our weather and do what they're doing and, you know, think that it was okay.
Could you tell listeners about the experience that you had when you began to speak with friends and relatives about what you were seeing and you began to share this information with others? What had happened?
You know, it was interesting because it's a big fine line, and I think for me also in this whole journey has been a big learning about human behavior and how people react to things. Now, my closest friends were very concerned with me, and because it upset me enough that I literally cried for 4 months, and I knew that either it was going to make or break me, and I felt that I had to do something about it. So while they were pushing me forward in learning more about it or to do something about it and not let it get to me, I forced them to come along with me and make them see what was happening. It was like you can't just ignore it and pretend that it's not there. So luckily for me, my mom and my daughter, people that I was really, really close to, they immediately believed it, and they would listen to me and, you know, in explaining all these things, and they're very aware of it, so I'm able to talk to them about it. But then other friends who, one was an environmental lawyer, and I thought for sure she, of all people, would be so interested in this, and she just shut it down completely and said that it was perfectly normal and that contrails had always spread out over the sky, and unfortunately we just sort of had to go our separate ways.
Sounds difficult, Wanda, and I'm sure a lot of listeners can relate to that who have been in similar situations. We've had on a guest, his name is Tom Slate, and he is out there in California, and he had really presented a very simple but effective response to your environmental lawyer friend, which would be, well, how do you know for sure that that is normal? Because I'm interested. What data are you looking at? And that it's a very simple response, but very, very effective.
Yes, I think that. But also, I think it has been set up against us. There's been a huge amount of time spent and money, I'm sure, to keep this from coming out. And so there is a lot of disinformation out there as well. And I feel that people who really don't want to deal with this issue immediately go to that disinformation, and it makes them feel better. And then they can say, okay, now I can just set it aside and not have to think about it because this person says it's okay, rather than trusting your own instincts and your own gut feeling, which I feel that we've certainly gotten away from, that we trust what the TV will say or we trust what the professionals will say, rather than questioning ourselves and going, does that really sit right with me? I think that we've gotten away from that a little bit.
Yes, indeed. And Carl Jung says a lot of people have two personalities. One is the very natural self that will speak its mind, and the other, it's a persona in a sense, but the real natural self is the one with the intuition that would know that something's wrong, and a lot of people aren't as in touch with that part of themselves. That's what Carl Jung was setting up in a way.
It makes sense. Yes.
Were there any other significant interactions that you want to share with the listeners?
I felt there was one. I've always been a huge nature person, so in some ways I even beat up on myself. How did it take me so long not to see this, because I'm outside gardening or recreating and that sort of thing. But I have a friend who is an instructor, an outdoor instructor for climbing and hiking and that sort of thing, and I reached out to her and just saying, wow, you're out there in these big western skies. You must see this everywhere. And she out and out told me that she didn't want to watch any videos or get any information because she did not want to be sad. And I tried to express to her that, you know, we have always taken from nature. We take it for granted. We love that that we can go out and be in the woods and listen to the birds or to go on a mountaintop or all these beautiful, wonderful things. But when it comes time for us to take care of it, you know, who is going to speak for it? It can't speak for itself. And so I was quite angry with her for saying she didn't want to be sad, but she still wanted to be out and enjoy everything that it has to offer. But I think even still, with somebody denying that much, though, once that seed is planted, it must be incredibly difficult to fight that that knowledge, you know, that, you know, you do look at the sky no matter what, and it's got to hit you, so it must be hard to deny it, I guess, in their own, even though they are denying it.
It is a topic that does tend to separate people, and I know it can be examined among gender as well. Have you noticed anything in terms of awareness regarding women and men?
Yes, absolutely. I find that women, say, between the ages of 35 and up, are very receptive to it and are very upset about it and feel sort of this nurturing feelings towards it, even though the two friends that I mentioned before were women. But in general, I found that that women were more willing to take a little action towards it, or at least believe it. And then the men, I found, were like, putting it off, no way, can't happen, it's not happening. And I questioned it and wondered if it was harder for men to feel vulnerable as opposed to women. You know, maybe not to say that women are vulnerable, but I think they're more in a nurturing state and that sort of thing. And maybe that's where they're more willing to be open to it, whereas men are like, we're the protectors. And really having these planes in the sky spraying chemicals on us is a very vulnerable position to be in, and it's hard to accept that, I think.
Yes, it's a massive intrusion. There's almost nothing anyone can do right now. We're bringing awareness, but no one is going to the airbase to protest or stand in front of an aircraft taking off that's ready to go into these weather control operations. I would say you had a painful awareness process, but you did actively do something. Now, you did have a skiing story. Do you want to tell that one?
Yeah. Because I found out in November, and I am a very much an outdoorsy type of person, and two of my closest friends who were very concerned about me at the time, because I feel that it absolutely was a grieving process. You know, it took me a while to figure it out, you know, what it was, but I literally was grieving because the world that I thought was is not. And I think that's one of the hardest things for people to come to grips with. We all have this idea of what our world is, and when you find out that that just simply is not true, you do go through a grieving process. So they insisted that I get outside, and this winter was horrible with the spraying because we would have these, you know, we have this pristine, well, it's not pristine snow because it's the ice nucleation, you know, but there's, so it snowed a lot, and they would forced me to go out, but I would turn around and force them at the same time to watch the planes and see what they do. And I just said, so you know that this is just not me, you know, coming up with these ideas. And also where we live, we don't have planes. It's not normal for us to have planes here. So to see these planes, like within the 2 hours that we would be out skiing in the woods, the skies would completely go from pristine, beautiful blue to whiteout conditions. And so they were forced to watch it, and there was no way that they could deny what was going on. But it's interesting how they settle into it, and I think it takes... Different people obviously react different ways, and there is a knowledge. I think there's a huge knowledge out there of people that do know about this that don't necessarily take action on it. And then there are those of us that are so upset by it that we just feel driven every day to try to do something to bring light to it and to stop it from happening.
Why would you want to live in a world where this is going on and no one is saying anything? As many say, silence is consent. You're, by default, you're consenting to allow this, just similar to the smart meter issue as well. Then you felt compelled to put together a presentation, and I thought it was really, really good. And you divided up the operations into military application and climate engineering. And let's go into the... airline industry, because I thought that was interesting what you've researched on that. Can you tell listeners about that a bit?
Sure. There's several things. I mean, for one thing, once you discover this, or once I discovered this, and I feel others do this as well, it's like your eyes never leave the skies anymore. You know, it's like it's like you're constantly watching out to what are they going to do next. And in realizing, being 52 years old, that I had never seen, rarely ever even seen a contrail ever form. And then we might have military jets that do the supersonic fast up through our mountains, but even they never left a trail. Or we would have like a little twin prop engine type thing come by, and they never left a trail. So I think that's why it was such a screaming reality to me when I saw these planes leaving trails. And in watching them and then learning about the high bypass turbofan jet engines that are not water injected, and they, you know, they go through this whole process, so it's really difficult for them to leave a trail. It's so rare. And they would fly behind our mountains, and then there, you know, so it didn't matter where they went or what time of year or what the humidity level was or how cold it was. I mean, the whole thing, it doesn't matter. They would leave a trail. And then I have seen them also flying together where one is going by leaving a very short trail, the next one right behind it is leaving a very long trail, another one will come in leaving a short trail. So they're all spraying in whatever capacity and whatever that they're doing, and the sky always changes. Whatever is happening with them, it always was changing. So in keeping track of that, and also watching the Flight Radar 24, which is such a great application to use, because if you hear a plane going over, you can check it. And these never ever come up on flight radar ever. They always, it just shows no jets. And the other thing that I've noticed recently, because we here in the east, I think our storms are being seeded. Every single storm we had in the winter for snow, these jets would come and you would just hear them going back and forth in one area for half an hour, 40 minutes. And then they would go on to the next area. And then the next day, you know, we have all the snow. And I had it tested, and it had aluminum and barium in it. So we knew that it's not supposed to be in snow by any means. So these jets never come up either. It's almost every single time there's a storm, I feel that it's all being manipulated now. And it's just an interesting process that if you really pay attention, you can see it happening so clearly.
Last year and the year before, you can go. You would hear about somebody trying to light a snowball on fire, and it would have a plastic burning smell. It would turn black.
Yes. And,
or it would turn into a sludge. There was a woman out in New Jersey a couple years ago who took images of this gel that was all over her car. And well, listeners know about the product called Dyno Gel that is used in climate engineering as well. And I want to remind listeners that we're speaking with Wanda Allen, and she's in New Hampshire. So this is the area of the country that we're kind of talking about. Now, in your presentation, you also talked about the known side effects of climate engineering. And among them is occluding the sun and the fungus and mold that proliferates, decline in photosynthesis, and then also the vitamin D creation in the body declines, making you more vulnerable to disease and viruses. But some of the other effects to the overall weather system and environment, can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, you know, the other thing, too, is an interesting factor that I have found out in speaking with people and having professionals come back and talk to me as well. One of the things that just happened is the Alzheimer's Association, you know, because aluminum is associated with Alzheimer's, and one in three people die with dementia or Alzheimer's, and maybe not from it, but with it, and it's found in their brain tissue. And the Alzheimer's Association did not want the Dane Wigington, who is from geoengineeringwatch.org, they didn't want him to purchase a booth at one of their events, and they sent him an email, and they said the reason why was because that they had not found that aluminum was associated with Alzheimer's. So, of course, there's a shock right there, but and it's known, you know, the ADA, you know, all of the thing, the autism and all of that. But the other thing that I found out during my presentation is that Roundup helps facilitate aluminum to pass the blood-brain barrier, as well as fluoride. Both of those things help facilitate metals and into the blood-brain barrier. And
you're absolutely right. That was
that's huge.
Yeah,
that's huge.
It's a big deal. Fluoride. So if you're drinking fluoridated water, listeners, and you're breathing air that has aluminum particulates, nanoparticulates in it, then it's leaching into your brain.
Exactly. Exactly. And it, and the other thing, too, that a lot of people don't know about, but, you know, the whole HARP system and all of the extra low frequencies, the ELFs, and that is emitted around us, and particularly in cities, it's even worse, but with all the cell towers and the Gwen towers and even the NEXRAD towers and all of these towers, and if there was some way to... like in a movie, when you see that they spray to see where the red the laser lines are, or you know, the infrared, it's like if we could see how many frequencies were flying around us, and they also are on, you know, it's all in the same frequencies as our hearts and our brains. So, and they have showed, you know, there's been studies where they've used it as a type of torture to be able to do mind control. So it can make you very sad, or it can make you very happy or angry, or all these different emotions. And they use these frequencies to, you know, move jet streams, move the clouds wherever they want them to go, and all of that sort of thing. So that's like a whole other aspect that we're being hit with that people don't know about. And you might go, why do I feel this way? There's no reason for me to feel this sad, or, you know, why am I so angry? Or, and it's interesting that the research that I've done on finding out how these frequencies really affect how you think, and it's a scary thought there.
When you begin to spray metallic salts, metals in the air, and then you use ionospheric heaters and electromagnetic weapons or devices, you're going to be able to move the clouds around, and you're going to be able to make images in these clouds.
They do talk about also creating somewhat of a plasma screen, also with the aluminum, you know, the metal particles. And I know in Arizona, in Fort Huachuca, they actually have done quite a bit of research down there and putting up holograms. And it all sounds so futuristic, and you think, no way, you know, what they would have told us, you know. And I still, there's times when I just think, oh, I hope this is all not real. But then you look up at the sky and you just see the most bizarre things happening. And also the sunsets now, sometimes they're beautiful, but knowing what's in them and causing them to be these extreme colors of the, you know, the pinks and the reds and the rainbow effect that is coming out too in the clouds. And it's usually, if I have glasses that tint outside, and mm-hmm. you see these green and pink hues, and if it was a true rainbow, it would have all the spectrum of colors, you know. And it's not, it usually is just pinks and greens, and it's when the sun is allowed to shine that it peaks and it hits these clouds. And it's amazing the amount of technology that they have and how long this has been going on. And the actual documentation just showing even 1966, you know, weather control. And then from there, and perhaps they started out maybe with good intentions, but by 1996, Owning the Weather by 2025 comes out. So you can tell they have taken these, what could have, even though it's not right to work with the weather or change the weather, they take it, and now it's weather warfare. It's a weapon, and it's a very real one, because who can say, oh, you're droughting out this country, or you're stealing our water, or you're making it, you know, have floods here, and that sort of thing.
I liked, in your presentation, I really liked how you were explaining the various clouds that you were becoming aware of that you didn't really see that much. And one was the cumulus, the particular type of cumulus cloud. And Dane Wigington was showing in a presentation how the aircraft stop convection clouds from growing and pulling up rain and raining out in some other area or location. And I wondered if you could explain what you found in how geoengineering or climate engineering disrupts the hydrological cycle.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting too, because I think for the deniers that really just don't want to think about this, in all the geoengineering paperwork that comes out, they all say the side effects, you know, to the environment from this are droughts and floods, and also that it interrupts the hydrological cycle, because what happens is there's so many particulates that get sprayed, and they're, what they're doing is they're spraying out in the Pacific, and so they're stopping all, because that's where all our weather starts, is way out west, and so they spray, so there's too many, it's called a condensation nuclei, and there's too many particulates for the water vapor to attach to. So it just dries up any weather or water, that moisture that could be coming into California, and so it migrates further. And what do we get in the Midwest? We get floods. We get these big deluges that come down and that sort of thing. And, you know, people would, you know, because I always ask the question, you know, they know how to do, if they know how to seed clouds and make it rain, then why is California in its, you know, in this horrible drought, and why would they not do something there, since all our food is grown there? And it also, you know, it talks about food disruption for billions of people. It's on record, and I think Ken Caldera talks about that. And he says, you know, it could cause food disruption for billions of people. So in knowing all these side effects and still, and it damages the ozone, you know, which is even worse, you know. So they want to put up this fake cover for us, you know, saying that it's reflecting back the sun, and yet that's what's causing, you know, the ozone depletion in the first place. So it makes zero sense to the way that they're thinking. So, and I think most people would not, if they were given a choice, they would say, no, we don't want this, no. And I'm hoping that they're not I've noticed already how the media is starting to mention this geoengineering or climate engineering as being a save-all to climate change. And people need to realize first that it's the climate change is coming from these programs and that it's not the answer, it's the cause. And that needs to be brought into light soon.
Wanda Allen is our guest. We're talking about her recent awareness of climate engineering and the presentation she recently gave in New Hampshire. If you're tuning in just now, our guest is Wanda Allen. She's from New Hampshire, and we're talking about climate engineering and connecting more dots. Right. I had Dane Wickington on a number of weeks ago, and we were talking about the Climate Change March and all these wonderful people marching who, I mean, their heart's in the right place, but there was no acknowledgement of the weather control operations that are basically affecting the climate, and you cannot, right now, acknowledge one without the other. You have to look at the big picture. And what are your thoughts on that and the people, the young people who are swept up in this propaganda?
I think for me, too, the other thing, too, because when I first found out about this, I'm writing to all these environmental groups, and I'm like going, come on, you know, we got to do something about this. This is the real issue. This is horrible. And, you know, and then not hearing a word and not, you know, and then, of course, it just goes deeper and deeper. It's like the Alzheimer's Association not wanting to associate aluminum with it, but and yet we find out later that there is an aluminum company that is funding, you know, the Alzheimer's Association. So everything is this big matrix of pretending that they're for one thing and then finding out they're funded by the very people that are causing the action in the first place. So I never understood how environmental groups could not, first of all, because if you're really into the environment, how can you not look at the sky and notice that it's not the same sky that we have had years ago, and it's how horrifically it's changing. And even to be upset about, if you don't even believe that it's geoengineering, how about thousands and thousands of planes up there with leaded gas and, you know, all of that, but they seem to just go past that. And it is a very frustrating thing to not understand how environmental groups cannot be aware, and once made aware, not look into it. It's irresponsible.
Really good point there, and may not have been that difficult for you to find out about Bill Gates having 500 shares in Monsanto, and he promotes geoengineering. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, he they're behind so many things, and they try to come off across as these, you know, incredibly giving and wonderful people, and he is one of the biggest advocators of geoengineering, and he talks about it all the time, and, you know, and funding, of course, David Keith, and I believe Ken Caldera is also supported by him, and also finding out that they are purchasing property out in California. So I think that's another big part of this whole weather modification thing, that people, you know, maybe they can come to it from that level, but the derivatives that are made on the Chicago Mercantile, and now these insurances that are put out against, so they insure a crop for, say, $5 million, and the crop, or the crop is worth $5 million, but they insure it for $10
million. Okay.
So are they better off to pay these weather modification companies to make it lose their crop or not lose their crop? So there's like this whole, and Monsanto bought this Weather Corp for just under $1 billion. They bought it, and it's a weather prediction company. And so they're making millions and billions of dollars off these failed crops or these hedge funds, and it's big business. And now when you look into these weather derivatives, down in the Gulf Coast of Mexico.
Wanda, can I stop you there for a second? Now, regarding the crops, are these GMO crops that are failing and they would clean up on the insurance for that, or are these private farmers that would allow?
I think it's more the genetically modified crops. I think that people, I don't think there's a whole lot of organic farms that could even afford, you know, to be, you know, they're just trying to keep the GMO seeds out of their, you know, out of their fields and, you know, the pesticides,
okay.
And they're dealing with all of that. But this is more like, you see it a lot in the heartland, but, I wish I was more versed in this area on the hedge funds, and I just read a really good article on it. I wish I could pull up where I had found it, but it showed clearly, you know, who's allowed to purchase hundreds of thousands of shares in these weather derivative type things, and, you know, it's known now that they can steer hurricanes. They can, you know, sort of whip up a storm right in the middle of nowhere, that they are able to do that, and I think that, you know, as sly and as evil as it sounds, I think these people that have this corporate greed and this need for more money, they're not going to stop at ruining somebody's crop or, you know, steering it off to somebody else. You know, if they steal clouds from one person, it's going to go somewhere else, and so nobody wins, or maybe somebody does, but it's not the good guy. And these crop insurances is big money, really big money. But what's happening also is that land out in California that's drying up, farmers are selling it because what are they going to do? They're going under. They can't afford to keep up with that. And now all of a sudden the Gates Foundation or, you know, they'll sneak it in somehow, but they're buying up land. It's a big land grab. And
this happened in Australia. This happened in New Orleans. Australia had those massive floods and those, of course, radar anomalies and wicked trails. And New Orleans, of course, Katrina, disaster capitalism right here, and with plausible deniability of geoengineering. This is why this information doesn't get out the way it should, because if enough people knew what was really happening on that level, which you just described, they would be pouring in the streets in outrage. But there's a mechanism, a very, very well-structured mechanism preventing people from seeing this truth.
Yes. It's very, very, very hard to get the word out. And it just sort of makes you all the more determined to do it. I mean, it's disheartening at the same time, but it's so imperative if there is a future for anyone's child. I'm looking at it that way. I mean, they are tearing the atmosphere and the earth in so many different directions, because it's not just the United States. It's all NATO nations and Russia and China, and everybody is doing this massive tug and pull to our earth systems, and it's just going down. And so these need to be stopped for that reason, and or otherwise, I strongly feel there is no future for the children, and that's a really sad way to think that, you know.
Well, look, and you mentioned that the woman didn't want to feel sad. Look, we have to go through the awareness process to begin to speak with an informed voice on these topics to bring more awareness, so people can become more engaged. Now, you mentioned the SBX radar in your presentation, and we've mentioned that in conjunction with Hurricane Sandy. Could you remind listeners what that is and how it's been used for weather control as well?
It's sort of like a floating HAARP system. It does work with radio frequencies and that sort of thing. And I believe these things are massive. I mean, they look like something from a whole nother world, and they have these giant warships that are kind of, they're floating around, and there's a lot of them, and they're out in the Atlantic, just off the Atlantic, and I think originally, who knows what they were really made for, but they also are for EMP attacks, you know, for incoming missiles, or if they want to try to shut down our grid and that sort of thing. Do I know how that works? I call it the deflector shield, you know, kind of thing, which is also, I think, in conjunction with the aerosols as well. But they are able to steer hurricanes certain ways. Do we have any natural weather? Do we have, is anything occurring? Is it all being manipulated at this point?
Are you saying that there's more than one SBX radar?
Yes.
Okay. I remember looking at a story several years ago of these huge platforms, floating platforms, being constructed in India. The reason the story was out was because of the labor strikes involved, where they were paying these workers very, very low wages, and they were striking and forming unions. But they were constructing these large platforms. They didn't say what they would be used for, but I suspect that's what these are.
Hmm. Yeah, it could be. I know that when I was doing my presentation, I looked them up, and there were several in different cities, and I think there was one outside of maybe over in the Pacific near Portland, Oregon, and you know, out that way. But I know that we do, you know, there were several different ones, and could I say how many? No, I don't know on how many, but there's definitely more than one. It's the same thing with the HARP facility up in Kokona, Alaska. You know, they keep saying that they're shutting it down and that sort of thing, but there's 24 of them around the world. So, you know, maybe they all do different things, and some are a little more powerful than others. But at this point, I think if they're dismantling something of that capability, then they've got other capabilities that are beyond that. And that in itself, I mean, if people were aware that they're literally, you know, heating the ionosphere and lifting it in our ionosphere, I mean, our whole protection from, you know, space, that's the whole sort of thing. I mean, how they play with the ionosphere and shoot billions of watts into it on a daily basis. I mean, how do you justify that and play with that kind of science without really knowing? Like, this, you know, when they set off 2,000 bombs, you know, they're just messing with the atmosphere. You know, I mean, they start out with one or two, and they're, you know, they're kicking these island people off these beautiful Pacific islands, and then they blow up the island. And it's almost like a kid in a toy box. You know, it's just like, ooh, look at that one. Can we do it again? You know, let's throw, I mean, wouldn't you think that after a couple dozen bombs, they would know how horrific they are and what they're capable of? But to do 2,000? I mean, that's just complete insanity at that point.
Yeah, Michael Tesserian goes into his theory on what is actually going on there. And you're saying, geez, how many times do you have to test this? You know, 100 is not enough? We do know these operations are going on. We're not getting the full truth. In fact, we're not even getting proper fake information. It's just complete confusion, and it's illogical in terms of the explanation, such as David Keith and Al Gore going on these talk shows saying, we're not doing it yet, but we're thinking of doing it, and we're seeing it in real time for years and years and years and years. It's a sad truth that for some reason that is enough to keep people from investigating further. To have some jackass go on TV and say, we're not doing it yet. We're thinking
exactly
of it.
And believe, like the nightly news. I think of this as being the classic example of the emperor's clothes, you know, where he's walking around naked, but everybody's saying, wow, your clothes are fabulous, you know, until some kid finally says, you're naked, you know. And that's, I feel like it's right in front of our faces, and it's, they must be getting the biggest laugh because they literally are doing it right in front of us.
And getting away with it. And they would be laughing. You point out that kids would see through this, but they've got something for the young people too. And in terms of the normalization embedded into animation films and commercials and newscasts, you put that in your presentation. Can you tell listeners, you know, briefly what that is?
I called it subliminal messaging, and it's everywhere. But to put trails and planes spraying in the trails, making tic-tac-toe grids, you know, and over the hedge and animated films and stuff like that. Now, you would think that definitely in films, if you saw trails and they were just contrails, they would take them out of the film. They would give it a blue sky in the background. The kids always had puffy white clouds and blue sky and the yellow sun. And now they're adding trails into almost every single kids' film now, especially Disney is really particular. And then they have this crop dusting, you know, animated film, making it seem so normal to have a plane flying around, spraying things, coming out of the back of it, and making it all oh so much fun. And having a contrail studies for children at NASA, you know, when they came out with that, having contrail studies. So have your kids stand underneath this and count the contrails. And it is amazing how they try to really indoctrinate them right into it, right from the very get-go.
Yeah, it's shameless. And the newscast, I thought the one that you showed on your presentation, it was, I thought that you actually made that graphic, but I saw it, I looked closely, and it's a still from a, from a newscast. And here, listeners, it's a woman standing in front of a blue sky, but there are actual real trails behind her.
It's a weather forecaster. That's the new thing, too, is that Weather Nation is one of the biggest ones that they purposely put these trails in their photographs and saying a beautiful sunset or whatever it is, but they are these horrific fake skies, and they're naming these aerosol clouds. They're giving them new names and making such a fun game out of it, and calling clouds the jellyfish clouds, or, you know, they even say man-made cirrus clouds, you know, and maybe if because they say it, they think it's okay. But Weather Nation is deliberate about doing it, and there are certain weather stations that do it. We had a local weather guy here say cloudy with a chance of contrails. Why would you say that?
Well,
why on earth?
Well, it's telling us that they're going in for the long haul, and it's beyond our generation. And, you know, they're going to call it smart clouds, and, you know, along with the smart water and the smart meter and the smartphones. Now, Wanda, in your presentation, you also talked about the carbon dioxide removal. Some people say it's connected to the carbon credit scheme. And, of course, Australia just got rid of theirs. The public voted against it. But you had an interesting take in your presentation. Can you share that with us?
Well, they have genetically modified trees that will suck the carbon dioxide out of the air. And they capture it and store it down below, underneath. And to me, it's trees. Real trees are, that's what they do. You know, real trees, real plants, and that sort of thing. So rather than, again, this whole deforestation and coming out with genetically modified everything, why are we not using real trees? And is it because all the trees are dying from these aerosol programs to start out with? You know, they're all just huge amount of deforestation happening, and it's tragic the amount of trees that we're losing from this. And to come in with these genetically modified trees to do that. And then they also add iron oxidation into the ocean, you know, to try to get that plankton food, you know, that sort of thing. But the more that they mess with our natural resources, I mean, they're going completely against what would work. And it should be obvious to anybody that is paying attention. It's like, you know, we need all those things that were naturally occurring. And I guess the other thing that I would like to add is not once was it ever brought up that the fossil fuel companies, I'm sure, you know, are behind a lot of this, but did they ever say, okay, let's start cutting down on how much we use our cars or how much we use this, or let's go completely over to new renewables? And that whole thing, it's not ever brought up. It's like consume, buy a big SUV, do these, all these things. It's never, and instead they do this dire operation of solar radiation management why would they do that instead of having us just never really been pushed?
It just, you made me think of all those people that were on the climate march, and why don't they ask that question? It's their question to ask. It's their future that their grandkids and their kids' grandkids will be living in this reality. And it's really incumbent upon them to ask those questions. Why is it okay to occlude the sun? Why is it okay to control the weather, to slowly stave off whatever impending disaster, catastrophe that's going to occur from keeping things as they are? It's shocking to me that it's gone on this far, and it just shows you that people are really in a trance. You could go down a list of what the reasons are, but we're extremely vulnerable. Well, there are many reasons why this is allowed to happen, even though a law can be an illegal law, such as the National Defense Authorization Act 1997, Public Law 105-85. And
yes.
Tell us what that is.
I think that probably was something that really brought it home to me, and I think a lot of people need to look at that because so many people feel our government wouldn't do this to us. And the law actually allows the government and the military to do biological and chemical testing on its own civilians, not within other countries. That's supposedly illegal, even though it goes on. But they are allowed to do it to their own civilians, and they have. And for a very, very long time, this has been going on. And also, we think that our military would not do this to us. And I think this was one of the saddest things for me to find out, is that there's following orders, and then there may be compartmentalization. They don't know, but they have done some horrific testing on us, unbeknownst to us, where they have dropped plane loads of infected mosquitoes with yellow fever into communities. They have done the gelatinous rain out in Oakland, Washington, where it made everybody sick who came in contact with it. They have done infected fleas with plague and dropped plane loads of those, and they have put anthrax in light bulbs and thrown it in the New York subway stations, and they've released a gas in St. Louis where it was in a black community, and they all started fighting with each other. There was this horrible uprise of anger, and you know, and they're just doing these testings, or they will do immunizations on Latino neighborhood and not tell the parents. They're just saying, we're just going to give this to you for free. And then they, you know, come back as social workers to see how sick these kids get. Or they have used orphanages as ways to, and this is universities and that sort of thing. So the universities are a big part of this as well, where they would infect all these poor kids with all these diseases and then use them as test subjects, basically. And so it happens all the time, and it has happened all the time. And it also happens to our military with the depleted uranium and in the ammunition, and they get very sick, and they also give them so many immunizations, and who knows what they're injecting them with, and they're forcing them. You know, there's a lot that goes on to our military that should not ever happen, and the testing that happens with them, and they don't know that this is happening. I think people really need to look at that to have a better understanding that, yes, they would do this to us and have.
Well, your presentation is posted up on Dane Wigington's site, geoengineeringwatch.org. And your channel is up there. If listeners want to reach out to you, they can reach you through your YouTube channel. And I want to thank you once again for being on In Other News.
And thank you so much for bringing this to light.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.